This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. Scott Simon is away. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
Your government failed you. Those entrusted with protecting you failed you. And I failed you. We tried hard, but that doesn't matter because we failed. And for that failure, I would ask, once all the facts are out, for your understanding and for your forgiveness.
Former anti-terrorism chief Richard Clark apologizing to the families of 9/11 victims in his opening statement to the 9/11 Commission on Wednesday. NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore is here. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, Linda.
Dan, the commission also heard from Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, several other top officials, but Mr. Clark's testimony dominated. How damaging, do you think, was his allegation that President Bush gave short shrift to the war on terror?
Well, damaging enough so that the administration appears to have mounted a counteroffensive. The Senate Majority Leader, Bill Frist, is demanding the declassification of the testimony that Clark gave before Congressional Intelligence Committee 2 years ago. He wants to show that there are inconsistencies between what Clark said then and what Clark said at that time. The White House and its friends on the Hill seem to be a little nervous about the good impression that Clark made, especially that classy acknowledgement of blame which we have just heard. I can imagine advisors like Karl Rove sitting around the White House and saying, gee, why didn't we think of that?
You know, I covered the hearings for the network this week, and I'd recommend catching the reruns because it was fabulously interesting. But there was a strong implication, the strong implication from what Mr. Clark said, and I must say others said, was that if the Bush administration did not sort of pick up the ball and run with it from what the Clinton administration had done on fighting terror, and it was partly because the Bush people didn't want to do what the Clinton people had did. They had done. They didn't want to follow in the line of Bill Clinton.
Well, I don't think that Bill Clinton would follow in the line of Bill Clinton if he had the opportunity. They were all learning a lot and learning it under pressure. Let me tell you a little story that was told to me by a Democratic fundraiser who recently had lunch with former President Clinton. And Clinton revealed to him something which one doesn't ordinarily hear about, and that is a conversation that the outgoing president has with the incoming president over coffee just before the inaugural. And Clinton says that he said to Bush, you have five important issues that will face you on the international stage. One is the Palestinian-Israeli problem. The second is Al-Qaeda and terrorism. The third is North Korea. Fourth is India, Pakistan. The fifth is Iraq. And Clinton says that President Bush, about to become president, said, yeah, well, I don't entirely agree with you. I would take that fifth one first, and that was Iraq. And that was what hung over that whole administration, that Al-Qaeda, what was it? We need a state.
A state that Al-Qaeda is transnational terror, not state-sponsored terror. Condoleezza Rice has asked to meet with the 9/11 panel again privately to respond to some of the things that Richard Clark said. The White House counsel says that legally she should not be forced into a public hearing because she's an advisor to the president. Do you think Ms. Rice is damaging her own credibility by not taking the opportunity to testify in public?
Well, there's no question. A person who refuses to testify for whatever reason leaves an impression with the public that there is something to hide. Now, there may not be anything to hide, and maybe Condoleezza Rice has a point about the keeping confidential the advice that you give to a president, but she, when it's necessary, it can be done. President Ford, in spite of executive privilege and all, in 1974 testified before the House Judiciary Committee on the Nixon pardon. When you refuse to testify in public, having testified at great length in private, the tendency is to make yourself an issue, and that is what I think Condoleezza Rice has done.
Let's turn to the Middle East. Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the founder and spiritual leader of Hamas, was killed by an Israeli missile on Monday. Israeli government officials said they are targeting the entire Hamas leadership. Mm-hmm. Is there anything to be gained by doing this?
Well, they think so. A lot of other people think not. What's happening is that Prime Minister Sharon has been under considerable pressure from his supporters to make some dramatic demonstration of toughness before carrying out his announced plan of withdrawing from the Gaza Strip. And this is his way of showing we are going to withdraw from the Gaza Strip, but we're very tough guys.
The United States later vetoed a United Nations Security Council resolution that would have censured Israel for the assassination. The U.S. cast the only vote against that resolution. 11 countries voted for it, 3 abstained.
That's a veto.
Why did the U.S. see it necessary, feel it was necessary to go out on
a limb? In the Middle East crisis, whatever the United States does, it finds itself out on a limb, making the other side angry or both sides angry. The administration has a very delicate task at the moment of showing its support for Israel while deploring the kind of things that Sharon sometimes does. The United States has never allowed, as far as I can remember, an anti-Israel resolution. If it's only anti-Israel and doesn't say something about violence on the other side, the United States has never let it go through and has always exercised its veto of such resolutions. Well, now the president is meeting with Prime Minister Sharon, I think the week after next, and then leaders of Egypt and Jordan, and I guess he's trying to refloat the American or the four-power peace offensive.
Medicare, Dan, in another problem for the Bush administration, Medicare actuary Richard Foster testified to the House Ways and Means Committee that he was pressured to keep his Medicare cost estimates a secret or risk being fired.
Right.
Mr. Foster's estimate was considerably higher than the figures that were given to Congress before the bill was passed last year. Reprisals in the offing, do you think, either for Mr. Foster or maybe for the administration?
Well, oddly enough, I don't see any sign of reprisal. In the first place, it should be noted that Foster finally told the truth about it, but only after the Medicare bill passed. So that had he done it before, there was a very good chance the Medicare bill would have been stalled in Congress. So coming up later is not really quite as bad as all that. In any event, I think that Foster has said he's ready to resign, has allowed himself to be talked out of it by his staff, and I think that the administration has enough trouble on its plate right now to take on yet one more whistleblower.
Congress has also passed a bill that would make it a separate crime to harm a fetus during an assault on a pregnant woman. The bill is on its way to the president. Abortion rights activists are saying that this legislation is really aimed at bolstering the anti-abortion cause. Do you think that's right?
Well, I guess it's true. It does look like another move on the way to us trying to ban abortion following the signing last November of the ban of what the critics call partial birth abortion. When you say it's an offense to harm a fetus while committing a federal crime, you are by implication saying that the fetus is a person, so it's part of the campaign to ban abortion.
The Supreme Court heard arguments this week in a case brought by Michael Newdow, who is a California atheist who objected to his daughter having to say the words "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Newdow, he's not a practicing lawyer. He made an impressive presentation, Dan, very quickly.
He made a very, very impressive presentation, and everybody thought it was really quite a wonderful one. And Justice Scalia is recusing himself because he made some remarks on the issue. He is not recusing himself, however, on the big story about Vice President Cheney.
Dan, thank you very much.
Sure.
NPR senior news analyst, Dan Shore.